Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today we're going to take a look at Mars conjoining Neptune in the sign of Pisces. This is, of course, something we talked about because Mars was the ruler of yesterday's full moon. And so the fact that Mars is moving as the ruler of the full moon in Scorpio into a conjunction with Neptune, we said yesterday was significant for the meaning of the full moon. We're going to take a look at Mars-Neptune as an archetypal combination today, which may help us to deepen our understanding of some of the elements of the full moon that we just had, but it'll also help us understand this dynamic of Mars-Neptune in a kind of archetypal vacuum as well. So good day for studying this particular archetypal combination. All right, anyways, before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments and reflections if you have them. If you have a good story to share this week, we've had a lot of good aspects and transits lately, so use the hashtag grab, tell us the name of the aspect, tell us your story, or email it to us, grabbed@nightlightastrology.com. We're going to be doing some Jupiter-Uranus storytelling in the next Grabbed episode. You can find transcripts of any of my daily talks on the website, which is nightlightastrology.com. Well, promotions for the day before we get into it. Go over to nightlightastrology.com. You can see the live talks under the events page. Coming up, we have Neptune in Aries as the next monthly webinar talk. If you missed Uranus in Love, Neptune in Love, or Pluto in Love, you can pick those up if you go to the shop tab at the top of the screen there. But you can also register for May, June, or July's monthly webinars. Neptune in Aries will be the subject of our upcoming webinar in May, then the 12th house in June, and then Uranus in Gemini in July. So we're taking a look in a couple of these talks at the movements of the outer planets into the next signs, which will be happening within the next year. If you go up to the courses tab, first year program, horary program, and second year program all begin in June. I will be telling you more about the horary program in some upcoming episodes a little bit later into the month and into May. For now, I want to tell you about the first year program, which begins on June 16th. It meets on Sundays from noon Central to between 2 and 2:30 p.m. Central Time. That's 1 to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can learn more about the program on the course page. It's 30 live webinars on the year. We have breakout study sessions staffed with tutors. We have a forum discussion staffed with tutors. Lots of bonus material. You can take it at your own pace. All the recordings are held on a class website, or you can follow along in the live webinars. There's a lot of opportunity for community inside and outside of class. At the bottom, you'll find the early bird payment is available until May 15th. We've extended the sale to May 15th. Early bird installment plan is also available till May 15th. Now, those prices for the normal course price is going to go up after May 15th. So be sure to take advantage of it before then. Of course, if you are someone who needs a little bit of help, need-based tuition is available all the way up until the start of the program. That is for people who might be in a little bit of financial hardship or very fixed budget or single parent or full-time student or only part-time employed. You can apply now. And when you do so, you can enter the amount that works for you within a sliding scale. And we set you up with a payment plan based on your needs. So take advantage of that and register now. At the end of today's video, you'll hear me talking about the program in depth. If you stick around after the content is over, I have a little informational video that I've created so you can understand better what the program includes, what it's all about, if it's a good fit for you and so forth. So stick around afterward to learn more about it. Okay, well, today we're looking at Mars conjoining Neptune. Now, let me pull it up on the real-time clock, and let's get into it. Alrighty. Now, we're going to see if my pen. Curses to my pen, man. All right, hold on. I'm going to try one more thing. I've been like really trying to figure out why my pen is being so temperamental. Let's try this. And now let's try this. There we go. Oh my gosh, we got it. All right, perfect. So there's Mars and Neptune within the 3-degree engagement range now, which is the degrees of separation within which we start to really feel and notice the events promised by the conjoining of the two planets. So let's track this out. This is April 24th, Wednesday, 25th, Thursday, 26th Friday. See, they're coming to within about a degree over the weekend. They come onto the same degree Sunday, April 28th. And by Monday, April 29th, they have Mars has passed over. And by Tuesday, April 30th, Mars will be entering the sign of Aries, where it is in its own rulership. So you could say that we have a little less than a week in front of us where this transit will be felt. But the important thing is today we get the engagement range, which is where you really start to feel the transit coming on. You may not notice or experience the most intense pieces of this from like until Saturday to Monday, the 27th to 29th. But, you know, it's coming on now. So really any time from the today forward, you may notice some of the themes that we're about to discuss. So five things to watch for. I always try to cover Mars, Neptune, or any aspect that comes around, like squares from Mars to Neptune come around, you know, somewhat regularly, oppositions, conjunctions, and so forth. So when you are someone who watches my channel regularly, you know that, you know, I like to cover the archetypes of the planets and their combinations from lots of different perspectives so that we get a feeling for the multidimensional and multivalent nature of aspects in general. We learn a lot that way as students of astrology, and we also start to broaden our perspective when it comes to noticing the planets in our lives. That being said, I always try to come up with new things that I haven't necessarily said before, while also maybe hitting things that you sort of have to say every single time because they're so basic and important. So some of these are kind of like a little bit more familiar if you know archetypes, and hopefully some of them are new. Five things to watch for with Mars Neptune. Well, first of all, you have in Mars, you have the principle of will, aggression, drive. It's one of the archetypal planets. It's one of the planets that represents the archetypal Yang, that which is centrifugal, moving from the center outward. It tends to be more masculine, if you want to put it that way. But we're talking about metaphysical masculine, not literal gender or sex categories. So, we're talking about Mars as the desire that takes us out to hunt, to pursue what we want with vigor and action, to start things. It's inceptional. It's sort of in a symbolic sense, it's sort of phallic, right? If you ever look at the symbol for Mars, the sort of masculine symbol, right? You get what I'm talking about. So Mars is the hunter. Mars is the protector. Mars is the advocate. Mars, also the root word for martyr and Mars are the same. So people who are willing to die for something. And also Mars has the sense of passion. That means suffering on behalf of something we love. Mars and Venus are cooperative planets. They are embedded within each other. They are in each other's beds. And they literally have a way in which they do the exact same things, but they do the same things in very different ways. For example, people will say, oh, Venus, you know, she's all about peace. Not really. I mean, she compared to Mars, yes, but there's ways in which the desires of Venus will, you know, the way that Venus gets things done and accomplishes things in the name of desire can be just as selfish and materialistic and vain and self-centered and potentially oppressive to other people. Now, I'm not trying to accuse Venus of anything. I'm just saying the two planets in their relation to desire and the way in which desire can be really problematic in terms of how we treat the earth, how we treat each other, they're equally problematic at times. So it's important to remember that, because that also means that Mars can be a part of some of the best things. For example, if you want a more peaceful world, you have to be willing to make some effort, and you have to be willing to, you know, chip off a little of your own skin, your own blood, sweat, and tears, and throw it into the sacrificial fire. There's nothing in this world works without a little effort, you know. So Mars is the weird fact that peace requires effort and sacrifice and work, and that there's the overcoming of obstacles, perseverance, advocacy, that those things are some just as necessary for many of the most beautiful, peaceful things it's a kind of Marsy truth. Of course, there are the problems of Mars, like all of the problems of being belligerent and competitive and domineering and selfish and oppressive or cruel and severe and violent. Like those are all potential Mars significations as well. on the surface, Mars looks like, okay, you're the bad guy, right? But my point is just that Mars and Venus actually go together. They're opposites in both signs that they inhabit. And it's important that we remember that right now, because Mars is conjoining Neptune in a sign that is feminine, double-bodied water sign of Pisces, and a sign that is the exaltation of Venus. So what do we get when we combine those qualities together? Of course, Neptune is a planet that is associated with everything idealistic, romantic, transcendental, mystical, imaginative, otherworldly, the yearning and the aspiring for things that are Edenic and ideal in some way. It is the same longing that fills the hearts of poets and artists and mystics, saints, but also drug addicts. It's the same kind of longing for bliss or union that can give us it can help us find things that are of tremendous artistic, spiritual, or psychological value in other people, in the world, in the arts and culture. Neptune is, but it's also the same kind of planet that can be involved in intoxication and illusions and the desire to escape that becomes problematic in, say, the life of a drug addict. And these are all things you guys mostly know about Neptune. It was fascinating, by the way, to look at Neptune in love in our last webinar series. Don't miss that one. Pick that one up from the shop if you want to really deep dive into the way that Neptune shows up in love, which is super fascinating. But anyway, when you combine Mars and Neptune in this kind of romantic double-bodied water sign of Pisces, the exaltation of Venus, one of the things that you get is as a combination is romantic and spiritual crusading. What that means is that we are driven to fight, to act, to defend, to sacrifice, to suffer with passion on behalf of something that we find beautiful, redeeming, uplifting, imaginative, or emotionally satisfying. And we'll find ourselves just burning and churning with this desire. I've mentioned this before with Mars-Neptune, but the tarot card that matches the Mars-Neptune and Pisces combination very well is the Knight of Cups. And there was actually a movie made. I'm trying to remember who did this. It was the same director that did the Tree of Life, but I can't remember his name. Anyway, he did a movie. I think it was called Knight of Cups. The fine line between romantic, emotional, crusading art and, say, drugs and party, it can be very Dionysian Mars-Neptune. There's like an oblivion drive that Mars-Neptune embodies. You have to kind of watch for that a little bit. But romantic and spiritual crusading is one thing that can make its way into our life right now, really in any arena. We might see it showing up in the life of someone close to us and it's hitting us, and by proximity. Or we might notice it at work or in our creative life or our spiritual life, or we might notice it with respect to, our body or our spiritual interests right now. So pay attention to that quality of romantic and spiritual crusading and asking the question, is this healthy for me? Am I going too far? Am I becoming fanatical about something? Always possible for there to be a little bit of a kind of a Dionysian madness that this actually going to dismember us and kind of pull, we can lose the plot. So just something to remember. Number two, intoxication with Mars images. This means that the degree to which we are feeling high on or enamored by images of Mars, probably, there's a way in which Mars can be romanticized. I want you to imagine, like, this is something that there's a place where we live and people like to, not far from here by the lake, and people like to drive their like really expensive cars and motorcycles and stuff down this strip. And it's sort of like, look at me, look at how wealthy I am, look at how beautiful I am, like that. And it's, it's actually kind of cool to see the human species just putting their peacock tails up and everything. Like, it's kind of entertaining. We go to the kids, there's like a little splash pad. We go down there and kids play on the splash pad. And so I'll be like, wow, look at, there's a Corvette. Holy crap. That's kind of cool. So I'm not trying to be a jerk and judge anyone, but like the intoxication that we have right now with Mars images, strength, speed, muscle, yang, of course, in a double-bodied water sign like Pisces, very, very watery, very emotional. It might be the sensitive man, right? Or the sensitive yang, whatever that looks like. It could also be that there is some sense of that which is fluid and otherworldly, like a magician. You know, I think a little bit of like, you know, the kind of like 1980s, what was that guy's name? Was it David Copperfield? What was his name? I think that was him. Anyway, you think of it like that kind of like, I'm like a beautiful magician, Mars, Neptune, any kind of intoxication that we have right now with, images of strength or images of success or images of things that are, smooth and silky and beautiful and strong, right? Those kinds of things we can just see being enamored by those things. So that's the intoxication with Mars images that we have to watch for. And then again, ask ourselves, are we being pulled away by something that's, you know, healthy or unhealthy, grounded, real, or somehow unreal? Number three are subtle irritants. Interestingly, Mars in general was associated with the sixth house in ancient astrology, which was called the house of misfortune, and a house that was also misfortune being broadly associated with things that frustrate us, things that we have to overcome as a matter of circumstance. They arise and we stub our toe on them metaphorically, and then it's about how do I overcome these frustrations or challenges. You know, when Mars gets together with Neptune, you're taking the planet that is associated with frustration, difficulty, hardship, and the need to endure and overcome through perseverance and determination and will and strength of character. And now you're saying that this planet of irritation is being paired with a planet of great subtlety and things that are relatively subtler and maybe even invisible. Subtle irritants come to mind, like allergens or mold or things that are making you your immune system react or respond, and you can't quite name or pin down what it is that's triggering the irritation. Just a general sense of the psychic atmosphere being it's pervaded with a kind of Mars irritant. And it can be a little bit like boiling water with Mars in a double-bodied water sign, where you kind of have this god of heat and intensity in a place of watery changeability. So it's like, you know, subtle emotional disturbances or perturbations and, you know, subtle irritants. Watch for that quality. And remember that there is a tendency for the victim-redeemer split to come up really strongly. So when the atmosphere, we just sort of find that everything is irritating or getting under our skin, it's easy to look for scapegoats or to look for, to become a victim or to say, I need a savior, or to look for quick redemption solutions. Being patient and getting to the source of the irritation and being patient and moving through spaces of Mars, Neptune irritation, we will often come to the other side. The irritation will go away, and we'll realize that, you know, we're actually thankful that we didn't try to pin it on anyone or anything or react and try to find some kind of miracle solution. We just let it pass. On the other hand, you know, there can be a way in which we just come where there's like epiphanies. Oh my God, I'm starting to understand what's irritating me, and I wasn't able to see it, but now I can. And then you can do something about it. All right, anyway, some things there with subtle irritants. Number four, the force of illusion or deception. Mars Neptune can be like someone is taking advantage of you. Mars, let's say, is associated with thieves. It's associated with highway robbery. It is associated with people who oppress or things that are invasive. It is associated with people or things that come to thwart or directly oppose. And if that's combining with Neptune, a planet that can be invisible, subtle, etc., then you have to watch for people or things that are trying to undermine you, trick you, deceive you. You have to watch for things like theft. Not that I want people to be paranoid or anything, but like just listen to your intuition if you feel like you're being taken for a ride. And also be careful of the degree to which you are allowing illusions, deceptions, delusions of grandeur to pull you into some kind of compulsive or impulsive behavior. So the force of illusion or deception is something to watch for. And then number five, the me becomes we. This is maybe one of the best things. It can maybe sometimes not be so great, but on the subjectively positive level, one of the things that Mars tends to be associated with is the individual will, individual strength, sovereignty, like all those kinds of things. Now, when Mars and Neptune get together, oftentimes it's I lay my sword down in service of the crown. You know, it's like a medieval knight saying, I'll be your knight, you know, dear king and queen or whatever. The me is pooled into the collectivity of Neptune with Mars, such that we find ourselves identified in our efforts, our will, our desires with something bigger than ourselves, which can mean that we're ready to serve in some sacrificial capacity, sacrificing something of our own interests for someone or something greater. On the other hand, if you're losing yourself, if you're losing your will, if you're losing your way, and that could be because you're opening yourself up too much to suggestion or influence or persuasion or deception, or it could be that you're losing yourself in groupthink. You know, you're losing your individual uniqueness and getting overly identified with a cause. So how do we hold that balance between the me and the we? Or if necessary, how do we lean into one or the other? And I think we just have to be really discerning and listen to ourselves right now. And we'll know if we're careful and not too impulsive with the decisions that we make, especially on an emotional level with this being in a double-bodied water sign. So anyhow, these are some of the significations of Mars Neptune that you will notice coming on between now and Monday, April 29th. That means over the next 4 or 5 days, you're going to watch for these things. And at least we take some time to get to know them and to remind ourselves of what's going on. Of course, these energies that we're discussing now are very much still a part of that full moon in Scorpio. So if you haven't yet listened to the full moon in Scorpio talk that I did yesterday, you might want to go back and check that out. All right, that's it. Stick around afterwards. You're going to hear me talk about the upcoming year one program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. My first year course in Hellenistic Astrology begins June 16th. I would love for you to come and study. So hang around to hear more about it. And you can sign up on the website, nightlightastrology.com, under the courses tab. Go to the first year course to learn more. Make sure you check out the need-based tuition if it can help you. All right, take it easy, everyone. Bye. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page. When you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year. These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends. But if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be what, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planet signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice they my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise, which could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play it. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, pertain to your own genie, your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session. And then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place, what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology, being bereft of its ancient textual tradition, has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000 year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as, giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.